Welcome back to Escape to the Magic Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Randy.
I am Dak.
And I am Ryan.
This week we're talking about the five keys of Disney.
Yeah.
Like physical keys, Dak?
No. So the five keys of Disney, if you're ever wondering what makes Disney so special, like what sets them apart as an organization and makes, like I mentioned this in the pre-show, what is their secret sauce? What makes you want to keep coming back to them? Why have they been so successful? This is their five-point philosophy that is not just a good mission statement or like, this is who they are, right? This is who Disney preaches to their employees and all of that over and over and over again and gets the buy-in that this is who we are as an organization and we're not going to deviate from it and we're going to build our whole company around this. So to me, this is a fun one. I think, you know, each of us in our personal lives and work lives are quote unquote customer facing. And so I think if you are in a business or if you run any sort of organization where you have customer facing interaction with the general public, this would be a great philosophy for you to see, hey, how could I incorporate this maybe into what I do on a day-to-day basis from my personal work life, right? Like my company or where I work or who I interact with. And I think it's a great, I'm excited to talk about it.
Well, what's interesting about this is that, you know, we're preparing an episode with a former cast member. We know her name is Sarah. She did the college program. She was a cast member, and I think what makes this fascinating is that she has talked about how these keys that she learned during her time at Disney has not only affected her, but has just allowed her to succeed in the world of business because she knows these things and she has applied these things to her life. So, you know, this is very interesting. You talk about culture, right? You talk about buy-in. Like I've been part of an organization where I've had employees, and sometimes, you know, you try to preach culture, you try to preach, hey, let's all rah, 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 let's do this. And it's like, you get some people that just don't give a crap. They're just not going to buy in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. And maybe we've talked about the difference between Disney World and Disneyland cast members. Mm-hmm. You know, there's different levels of buy-in, you know, mm-hmm. between the two. But generally speaking, at Disney World, you feel like the buy-in is more universally accepted. That, yeah, I can tell that cast member has really bought into what they're preaching. And, you know, not sure what's happening at Disneyland. We love you, Disneyland cast members. But there is a different level of buy-in from one park to the other.
I think that's absolutely true. You know, we've previously talked about the importance of making sure that guests treat cast members with respect. You know, because that goes both ways, right? I do think that by and large, cast members go out of their way to provide you with an exceptional experience. The question is why? This is a sort of thing, you know, let's talk for just a second about Chick-fil-A, right? Everyone mm-hmm. knows that Chick-fil-A is really kind of synonymous with customer service. In fact, they have a customer service training program that many other organizations call on Chick-fil-A to come in and now train their people on, hey, how do we be more customer facing? We've even used that at the municipal government level before. We've brought Chick-fil-A folks in to talk to some of our engineers about, like, how do you interact with other people when they're submitting designs and plans to you? And what's the mindset that you want to adopt on being that way? So the company culture on those interactions is absolutely a critical thing. And the only other one that I would put on, frankly, the same level in terms of a customer-facing, customer service sort of standard would be Disney. Yeah. And that just comes from such deep experience with how it works and how it goes. Now, that's not to say that every interaction is going to be perfect, okay? You're gonna have moments where sometimes it's not going to meet the mark for you. But today's episode is about really going into what makes that culture what it is. How do we even get to that point?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Randy, I think it's called the Disney Institute as a as a professional organization, you can sign up, or as a, you know, leadership group, you can sign up, go to Disney, and they'll train you the Disney way, right? So yeah. that's a catchphrase I think a lot of people use for different organizations, right? The, you know, like in football, it's the Patriot way, right? Like New England Patriots had a way of doing things. They had, you know.
Yeah, they deflate footballs.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. But,
You said it.
So we're getting off.
I was going to go there.
Getting off. But they have a system, and you just trust the process. And so anyways,
they also film other people's practices. Yeah.
Someone's a disgruntled NFL fan over here.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Hey, the Patriots had the Texans number for many, many years. Texans were good, you know, for a while there, and they just couldn't get over that Patriot.
Now, I'd about to say, I think everyone had the Texans number for many years. But
all right, so five keys of Disney. Let's get back on track here. So the first key is the safety key. Then you have the courtesy key, the inclusion key, which actually is the newest key. It came out in 2020. Then you have the show key, excuse me, and then you have the efficiency key. So these are the five keys. We'll get into each one. What's interesting is the reason why they're in the order that they are is their order of importance, right? So the safety key is going to be the first key that we talk about, because safety key supersedes all the other keys. So I'm going to give you a safe experience at the parks before I may even be courteous to you about it.
Yeah.
Like when there's a hurricane coming through, I may not be as courteous. I still am going to be courteous, but if you're in immediate danger, right? If a kid is, maybe a hurricane is a bad example. If a kid is climbing up on a wall and about to fall off.
We may need to yell at you.
Right. To get your attention, to get you off the wall.
Which we wouldn't ordinarily do. It's an interesting thing. And I want to preface the entire discussion for our listeners with this thought. Don't make an assumption about what these keys necessarily mean. You may hear a word and you may think it means something. As we go into these, I think you'll start to understand a little bit better about what goes into it and why it is what it is. But talking about safety, isn't it interesting? So many times you'll see a company put out a press release or a public statement about something, and they'll say, safety is our top priority, right? And I remember working for a company once where, you know, everyone did this during the COVID pandemic, for instance, right? When they sent their employees home, they did this other thing. It didn't matter what it was. They would always say, hey, safety is our top priority. And I remember sitting there thinking, I worked for a company one time and they put a statement out there. And I was like, that is not our top priority, guys. Yeah. Like, safety is not the first thing we think about. In fact, we never even talk about it. How could we deign to make that claim? Like, making money is our top priority. That was the company's mission at the time, right? Safety really is Disney's top priority.
No, absolutely. And I think, so what was interesting is I was kind of poking around doing my research for this show. I don't know how I was able to access this website. I may have broken some rules, but I got on to...
Well, let's just announce that on the podcast.
Yeah. Somehow I got on to Tokyo Disney's internal, I don't know that it was internal. But it was definitely...
It was not internal.
What is the name of the company? I'm going to... Ryan, you...
OLC.
The OLC. So it was the OLC's page about their safety. And so I thought, oh, this is perfect, right? So the OLC is the... what's the acronym? Oriental
Land Company.
So they partner with Tokyo Disney to create Tokyo Disneyland. Anyways, so this is where I got a lot of the safety information. So their number one areas of safety concern revolve around, of course, the attractions, the shows, and the parades.
All right, I got to stop you right there for a second. So, sorry, just real fast. So I came across a reel about the new Tron attraction, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you talk about safety. Well, what's one thing that people have been doing more and more of on the Tron attraction?
Oh, they lean forward and spread their arms.
They do what I do for them.
They do what I do. I mean,
the Superman.
They do the Superman. So, I mean, there was a point on our guys' trip, I think the last time we rode it, I was almost standing up.
I actually did it, and I was like, hey, if you, and I started telling everybody else, if you do this the right way, you'll actually lift a little bit off your seat and literally fly for a few seconds. Now, it's exhilarating.
Now, we do not advocate nor preach that you need to do this on the track. I just wonder, because this reel is like, when is this going to stop? Like, this clearly is not a safe thing to do. I mean, your feet are locked in. Like, you're not.
It's not just your feet, though. It's your knees. I thought about this. Yes. I was like, hey, boy, I'm really unsafe. And then I thought about everything that's going into place there to keep me down. I'm like, you're not coming off that.
No,
ride
you're not.
If you're not off. Holding on with your hands.
Yeah. But anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, you're good.
I just was thinking of that one.
But here's the point. They are aware of this behavior. And there's not been a remedial measure put in place to stop it, which tells you that they had already contemplated the safety aspects and concerns that go into it, yeah, right? True. I mean, if the first time they saw something like that and their Imagineers came back and said, hey, guys, the ride's not designed to allow someone to do that. They're going to fall off and die. They would have put a stop to it immediately. Very they would true. Have found a way to cut that out. Frankly, they would have done that long before the ride opened. And don't forget, Tron was open for 10 years overseas before it even made its way to Florida. So this has been going on for forever. This illustrates our point perfectly, right? That you may even observe things that you may think are unsafe. I can promise you Disney's already contemplated
that. Yeah, absolutely. The next one I had that was on the OLC site was park security. So I have a personal story of this. I'll save as we wrap up the security discussion, or the safety discussion. But park security is phenomenal, I think, at Disney parks. They are completely thorough. Their next area of concern was food merchandising. Then it rolled into cast members and guests and their personal safety from falls, spills. They mentioned first aid, of course. What I thought was interesting that kind of brought back my memory was the next area of discussion was emergency response and disasters. And like one of my favorite episodes on the Imagineering series is episode 5, where they talk about the tsunami in Tokyo and their response to that incident and how safe people felt at the parks. During an earthquake, right? Like an actual natural disaster is in the moment of happening and people feel safe and secure at a Disney park.
Well, and you had your own personal experience of that. You were literally at Disney during a hurricane once,
yeah.
Right?
So it's funny because I've been on, you know, obviously you're on message boards and blogs and, you know, Facebook pages and stuff like that. And people have brought up concerns of, oh, hey, you know, we're going and there's this hurricane expected to go through, or there's a big storm that's expected to go to. Look, these Disney hotels, at least Disney World for sure, are bunkers. Mm-hmm. They are bunkers disguised within a hotel theming, right? Yeah. Like they are absolutely secure. And I have never felt more safe during a hurricane, including in my own home, than what I felt at the Disney parks hotels. They were absolutely safe. So yeah, for sure.
And that's not by accident, right? Again, these are the things that safety is the first key to Disney, because that's what they're going to revolve all of the other things around first. First and foremost is what we're doing safe. What do we need to do to ensure that it's safe? How do we need to do, what does our response need to look like to ensure when something unsafe has taken place that we can respond appropriately and accordingly and remediate if necessary? I just think that's a great example of it. You know, building codes do a whole lot for you, but you know, we've all watched the news. When hurricanes go through an area, they leave a wide swath of destruction. Now, in fairness, Orlando's pretty far in, right? By the time a hurricane really gets to that spot in town, it's not nearly as powerful as it is when it hits the immediate coast. There's a reason why they don't build a Disney park on the immediate coast, right? And so I think that's where when we start to talk a little bit about Tokyo, it's a little bit different, right? Because it's not quite that same sort of thing. You know, they have those impacts from tsunamis, earthquakes, and everything else. And they've already taken that into account in their master plan.
I think also just the way, like, even when they start to design and lay out a new land or engineer a new land. Like you talked about the engineering of Tron and everything that goes into that attraction and the safety there. But even the literal layout of how a park or land is designed and put together has safety, evacuation protocols all put in place as part of their design for a Disney park. And then I just started to think of like, well, what are some examples? Like, do I feel safe when I'm at Disney? And I kind of pulled a few friends. And one thing that kept coming up to me is a girl's trip, right? Like, I'd never thought about this because I'm a guy, I guess. And I just don't think about like, hey, I'm walking alone or even in a park, right? Even in a crowded area, having a girl's trip where you're, you know, out there by yourselves or whatever, as opposed to like, say, being in New York City or Chicago or someplace like that. Do you feel safe, even Houston, walking the streets alone, right? I know for me personally, I have no problem when I'm at a Disney park to tell my teenage daughters, go get on that bus. It's going to drop you off right at the bus stop.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to walk right to the hotel room that we're staying at. I would never do that on any other vacation.
Sure.
Because I feel that my girls are completely safe in a Disney park or on Disney property.
Yeah.
Well, and I think too, if I can backtrack just for a second, when you talked about park design and engineering, I think of what they did at the Animal Kingdom with some of those animal enclosures, how, you know, they're designing these things to be safe, but they're also, with that in mind, how can we make this innovative? And they designed these enclosures, like you're looking at the cheetah, you're like, I think that cheetah could jump over that little gap there and get to me if he wanted. But it's designed in a way that it makes you think that, like, there's no cage, there's no, you know, fencing that's keeping that cheetah in its enclosure. It's just this innovative design of kind of this perspective that it looks like he can get to you, but in reality, nah, it would take a lot for him to get out of that enclosure. And I think that's what they do is they look at the safety aspect and how can we take safety and design our park and attractions with that in mind, but also make them just really innovative and unique to everything else that's been already.
I'll just share one more experience real quick story. So one time my wife and I were at Disney by ourselves, just on a couple's trip, and we were walking up, like I remember it as clear as day, we're walking up to Animal Kingdom, and I'm just one of those people who like to be aware of my surroundings. I take note of who's walking next to me anywhere, right? Anywhere that I go. And so anyways, so I noticed that there's a guy in front of me by himself, and he's heading up to the security check-in, and there's one of those officers, security guys that are coming towards us with a dog, right? And as we're about to cross paths with this police officer or a security officer, I notice he makes an immediate U-turn and starts to tail this guy that's walking 10 feet ahead of us. Anyways, to make a long story short, we get up to the security line. I lean over to my wife and I say, hey, pay attention. Something's about to go down. And sure enough, as this guy is going through bag check, something is identified. What was amazing is that Disney security was not freaking out. Like, they were very calm, and you could just see as time went on and they were doing the bag check, one by one, Disney security was starting to position themselves around this guy to be able to secure the situation. Eventually, what ended up happening is this guy gets pulled over to the side, and another lady out of nowhere comes over and identifies herself to Disney security, and it was a whole setup. It was an operation that was put into play unbeknownst to Disney security to check their systems, to make sure that they would catch an intruder.
They secret shoppered the security guards.
It was amazing, though, to watch this whole thing from start to finish go down, right? Like, we could have kept going on into the parks and never would have known that this incident had even taken place. But I was so fascinated by it that I actually, as we got through security,
you're like, I want to watch and see what happens.
Yeah. Right? other guests, hundreds of guests are just going by because Disney had complete control of the situation, right? And it just gave me the reassurance that they're on it. Like, yeah, they are checking and rechecking guys, people. Now, of course, you're never going to eliminate every threat, but on a day-to-day basis, they're shuffling hundreds, thousands of people through, and they're on guard, man. They're watching for us.
Amazing.
So I love that the safety key is the number one key. Any other thoughts on that before we move on to courtesy? All right, so courtesy key is the next one. On our notes here, I put courtesy is the very DNA of who Disney is as a corporation. So I think for anyone, even the person who doesn't, you know, necessarily love Disney, or it's your one Disney trip in your life.
Yeah.
The one takeaway I think most people get from Disney is how amazing what we would call the customer service is about who Disney is as a company. And what's interesting is this tends to span over the whole Disney corporation, right?
Yeah.
Like, you experience this in the parks, you experience it on the cruise line. Shoot, even when you, back in the day when you would go to the Disney store, it was the same customer service level that you felt, kind of like what you were mentioning before, Randy, as far as Chick-fil-A. In fact, what I think is interesting is one of their rules is we don't call customers customers.
Yeah.
We're guests, right? So if you think about it, if you were inviting someone over to your home, they're your guest in your home. And that's kind of the genesis or the mindset of what Disney wants their guests to experience. It's like, you're coming to our home.
Yeah. And you see that in their interactions with you. You know, what does a cast member always call someone when they need to call their attention? They call them their friend, right?
Yeah.
You know, hey, friends, this is what we need to do. And again, I think, yeah, for sure, that's a part of the culture. That's a part of the training that they all receive. But those words have a meaning there, right? We don't call people ma'am and sir. We call them friends, right? And you know, we don't call them boys and girls. We call them friends, right? Because we're trying to create an environment here where people recognize that we're all kind of together in this same sort of thing. And so I think it's a great example of it that it is the DNA of who they are. They're trying to elevate your experience as a guest there, as one of their friends, of someone who's going to come back often. You know, when you get to your Disney resort, they tell you welcome home.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is all part of that. And it's not just some kitschy thing that they're trying to do for show. Like, this is literally the environment that they're building.
No, I agree. And just three quick examples of, again, this goes into their training and their philosophy, is they don't want that relationship to be transactional. They want it to be interactional, right? They want to interact with you. They want there to be almost like they're trying to foster a relationship with their guests, so that it's this amazing, magical experience, right? I thought this was really cool that I want to kind of incorporate into my, like I said, my own personal business transaction, is a VIP at Disney is not a very important person. It's a very individual person. So they want to treat each guest as an individual, including, again, and this is where it tugs at my heartstrings, even your kids, right? Yeah, age is no matter. They want to treat the 45-year-old dad that's paying for the trip the same way as they're treating the 8-year-old, you know, that's experiencing it for the first time as well.
Yeah.
Which kind of goes to, and I know you've had some experience with this, Randy, with your own kids, is they have this philosophy of immediate service recovery. And I thought, well, that's an interesting phrase. An example of an immediate service recovery is you have a kid, they bought a, you know, box of popcorn. No fault of Disney's, right?
Yep.
The kid spills the popcorn all over Main Street.
Dak, stop saying the word kid and just say, Dak, I did this.
So Dak spills the box of popcorn. Again, is it Disney's fault that I wasn't paying attention and knocked my popcorn over? No, but what is their response? They're going to come, they're going to immediately clean it up. That goes back to safety, right? And all of that, the guest experience. But more importantly, 9 times out of 10, now I shouldn't expect Disney to do this, but they just do it.
Yeah.
They refill my popcorn for me. Oh, yeah. Man, let me get you another popcorn. Sorry that happened, right? Like, it's, again, it's just an amazing, and this is what to me makes Disney Disney, is in what world could I do that where I go to another organization, right? I spill my drink at the restaurant and they're looking at me like, whatever, right? Like, what a jerk. Now I got to clean up his mess.
Yeah.
They're certainly not asking me if I want another Coke, right? Yeah. Or whatever the...
But you know where you would get that? When you go to your friend's house.
Yeah. Yeah, for right. sure. Yeah, excellent. Nice.
Now, your friend's going to give you a lot of crap for spilling Coke on his carpet or popcorn or whatever like that. But you know what? That's the thing is, you know, hey, let me help you clean that up. And actually, Disney's not going to ask you to clean it up, right? They're going to do that. But, you know, can I get you another one? They're going to make you not feel bad about what's happened there because the culture that they're building is one built on courtesy.
Yeah. Another big philosophy they have built around courtesy is the create magical moments. This is, again, this is one of their big platforms in their training. A lot of people refer to it as just being pixie dusted, right? But basically, it starts with just a smile, smile at everyone. Like, again, I love that when you go to the parks, it's like this escape from the world where we're actually nice to each other, right? We're kind to one another and we feel welcome there. I did a lot of research on this one, but I couldn't find if it was real or not. I've seen a lot of videos on it. The Disney hug. Are you guys familiar with this?
I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah.
So you are.
Well, that the characters cannot let go first.
Yeah. So the rule is, unwritten rule, maybe, I don't know. I couldn't find any definitive answer, is when a little kid comes up and hugs, you know, Cinderella or whoever, Cinderella does not let go until the child lets go of the hug first.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so it just allows that child to be in that moment with their magical princess.
I'm sure there's exceptions to this.
Yeah. There's got to be, right?
Some may never let go.
You just can't hold on for an hour.
Yeah.
But Dak.
Again, let go.
Let it go, Dak.
Let Tink go.
Gosh. All right, moving on. Another thing is like,
let me talk about this one, this sort of thing, because this goes a little bit to, it's not quite immediate service recovery, but it's a little bit of these things. We've experienced this as a family many times where just this is the magical moment that is above and beyond. It's unexpected. It's never expected. Right. You know, I remember one time we were there and our youngest son, his favorite thing to do was to kick his sandals off while he was in the stroller. Just so happens, unbeknownst to us, one night we're standing at the bridge over Splash Mountain and he decided to kick his sandals off intentionally into the water below. We didn't realize it. Next thing you know, we're walking through the park and we're like, where's Henry's shoes?
Yeah.
And we kind of figured out what had happened and stuff like that. I think he told us actually, it's like, oh, I got rid of them. They went in the water. You know, it was an interesting thing. We asked cast members like, hey, he's lost his shoes over here. Is there anything we can do? And of course, the answer is no. There's no way we're going to be able to recover those shoes. But they said, hey, here's the thing. This store has some shoes. Pick out whatever you need. Right. Wow. And it was at no cost to us. That was one of those things as a young family, especially. And this is when it was Disney was a big sacrifice, right? From a financial standpoint, it was like, wow, like that was really kind of a special thing. But I remember another time and it always gets me just a little bit emotional just thinking about it. But we went there and we rode Space Mountain and you go through the Space Mountain gift shop, right? There at the power company. And my number three son, Colin, he saw something that he really wanted, but it was a big thing. It was like a rocket ship, okay? And it was large in size, and so we're like, okay, well, we're not going to carry that around all day. It wouldn't fit in the locker. We'll get it at the end of the day. Well, unbeknownst to us, that shop closed up a little bit earlier than the park closed, and so we didn't quite realize that was going to happen. Or maybe the park had just closed, but it was clear that it had been shut down. And, you know, at nighttime, Tomorrowland becomes a ghost town.
Yeah.
And So Kayla and Colin are trying to walk over there to get there. We realize the shop's closed and a cast member comes out to meet us. He's like, "Hey friends, like, you know, can I help you?"
Yeah.
And we realize the shop is closed and, you know, Kayla kind of pleads. She's like, "Oh, you know, we were trying to get here. It was our last day. You know, he really wanted, you know, this thing." And the cast member said, "Well, tell me what it is." They described and he said, "Okay." And so then he turns around, he goes into the store, and we thought that it was like, okay, they're going to let us go buy it sort of a thing. And next thing you know, this cast member comes out with it, says, "Here you go, buddy."
Wow.
That's so cool.
You know, that's one of those things that you can't really explain what it means to you. But for that kid, you know, who is of all of my kids and sorry, the other three, you know, he's the sweetest one,
mm-hmm.
right? He's one that doesn't ask for much. He's one that doesn't make a fuss about a lot of stuff. You know, he's kind of the consummate middle child. He's just going along with whatever. And sometimes probably he gets crapped on a little bit for that. You know, it meant something to him. And so for us as the parents, it meant something to us to have a cast member go out of their way. By the way, this rocket ship was like $80. Jeez. Okay. Like it wasn't like we were asking for a $10 plush or a keychain or something. Like it was like $80. And there it was delivered free of charge sort of a thing at the end of the day. You just can't really replicate that sort of thing unless it's part of your culture.
Yeah.
No, I agree. And it just goes like there's just example after example after example of this, you know, personal examples like what you're sharing. But just again, just philosophies. At the end of the day, they're not rushing you out of the park. Like they're not saying, "Get out of here. Let's go. Move it along, people." They literally let you stroll out of the parks, right? In everything. I mean, I've even called the Disney phone line, right? Where you're like, calling to get tickets, calling to make a change to your reservation. And it's a pleasant interaction, right? I mean, you're listening to Disney music as you're on hold, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, just put me back on hold. I'll be fine. no, but like, again, just everything that they do to make that experience as amazing and wonderful as possible. And again, life is life. But I mean, there's been so many times where I've left Disney. We've been staying either off property or whatever, or we just the plane ride home and you get back into reality and you deal with normal customer service.
Oh, it sucks.
Yeah. You're like, "Wait a minute. Don't you know who I am?"
No, I'm a very individual person.
I'm a big deal. Like the cast member back at Splash Mountain let me do this, right?
Well, you bring up the phone experience. I think this is a great one. I've never had an unpleasant phone experience. I've had some really long phone waits, even with Disney, right? Sometimes it can be hard to get through, but you never have an unpleasant experience. You need to understand that if you are experiencing a long phone wait, that cast member answering on the other end is going from call to call to call to call to call nonstop, right? And so they're having an experience of their own, but it's always been a pleasant one. You juxtapose that to other organizations where you've had a long wait and you get someone on the other end who finally answers and it's clear that they've had enough of their day. It's just not the same. And I just, it is. It's part of the Disney magic.
Yeah, for sure. We could go on this one for a long, long time because I absolutely love the courtesy key for Disney, but let's keep moving on. Next one is inclusion, and I think this is what you might have been alluding to earlier. It came out in 2020.
Yeah.
There's a lot of political charge around the word inclusion.
Yeah.
But I think, again, if you take a step back and understand where Disney is coming from this, you'll start to see where this key, above all other keys, even above safety, interweaves itself in between the other keys. It touches all the other keys where inclusion and that thought process of how can we make this inclusive for everyone starts to, you know, show.
Yeah. And I wanted to preface that early And I did mean it in terms of all of the keys, but this is one that stood out, especially since it's the newest one that's been added. You know, in 2020, there was this big push that we started to see, and we continue to see it in some instances of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. In a lot of circles, it's got a very negative connotation. We're not addressing that whatsoever here. We're actually talking literally about the art of inclusion and what Disney's trying to accomplish, particularly from the guest experience. This puts aside any of the political commentary or discussion. And as we go down this, you'll understand what that means. And I hope that all of our listeners will have maybe just a little bit of perspective, different perspective on this inclusion aspect of it in a moment, because you'll start to see how you fit in from your own unique perspective into the Disney family as well.
Yeah. So some ideas that kind of percolated up out of this is, you know, Disney World specifically, but then you start to think about Disney on a whole. Disney Cruise Line, Disney, you know, Shanghai, Hong Kong, Japan, Disneyland Paris. You have so many multi-language, multicultural people that are coming from literally all over the world into these parks. And Disney, I think, has done an amazing job of figuring out, how do we handle different cultures, different backgrounds, different language barriers, and make that guest experience unique to not only the family from Iowa, but the family from Portugal, right? Yeah. And how can we make this special for them as well?
And you know, we have talked oftentimes about the cost and expense of the Disney experience. They're taking into account the socioeconomic status of their guests as well, right? They're trying to make sure that there is room literally for everyone. When Walt said from, you know, 5 to 99, or I can't remember what the ages he said was, right? But it's fun for everyone. Like, he really meant that, literally everyone, because you're going to be at a different point in your life and all of those different ages, right? And there is a spot for everyone to have their own unique individual experience as they experience those parks, whether you're exceptionally rich or whether this is something you saved your entire life for to be able to do. We want you to experience the Disney magic that way, too.
No, for sure. And you touched on even on age levels as well, right? Like, kind of what you just shared with your son, like, they want that experience for him. They want that experience for grandma and grandpa. They just, again, have everything as part of their design and their outlay of what kind of guest experience they want to have, all based around the idea of inclusion. Some other things that I thought of were, of course, disabilities, right? Even we're seeing this now in the newer ride vehicles, things opening up and making it more available for not just physical disabilities, but any type of disability, right, that people are experiencing. One thing that I think is interesting is even like down to like pregnancies, you know, having facilities there for, you know, newborns and moms to be able to have a place to go in the middle of the park and, you know, take care of a young child. Down to, I just had a personal experience with this with someone that had dietary needs. I think Disney is probably one of the best companies out there that almost every time you sit down at a restaurant, even a quick serve, they're like, hey, are there any dietary needs that we need to be aware of? I love that they're including all of those things. You guys have any other personal experiences on the inclusion?
No, I mean, I think my family, for one, I think when it comes to, I love that you brought up the dietary, because I think, you know, for example, my brother and his wife, they have a couple kids. One of them, just this past week, she was at a camp. And prior to going to the camp, my sister-in-law was like emailing and talking to the food services person. Hey, what do you guys have in place for my daughter who, if she gets certain things in her body, she will go to the ER. And it's not serious. Like, it's a pretty serious thing. She carries an EpiPen with her. And they assured her, oh, yeah, we're fine. We have things covered. Well, sure enough, she's in line to get food at this camp. And she's asking the person dishing up the food, is that sesame?
Cross contamination.
Yeah. Like, and she's like, oh, yeah, you can eat this. And two bites in, she's like, I can't eat this. And her throat starts, you know, shutting down. And she injects herself with the EpiPen. And You know, it's like at Disney, it is, if you have a question, the person who is making your food, the chef, will come out and talk to you at your table. I think that's amazing. Like, there's so much care and compassion there when it comes to people that have different needs and different requirements. There's no judgment there. We're all different. You know, we all have our own special needs in a certain way. And there are some that have, like my sister, my niece, who's like, I can't eat certain things. If I do, I may go to the ER. It's a serious thing. So, and Randy, I'm glad the way you put it earlier is like, and Dak, you too, is like, inclusion just has this negative connotation nowadays. And it doesn't need to be that way, because we are all in need of something every now and then, a little special.
Yeah.
A little different, a little special.
And I want to talk just for a second about disability access. There's a little bit in the news right now. Disney's recently changed their disability access policies. And it's unfortunate because, and if you've gone at any point in the last probably decade, you realized how abused the system had become, right? And it's unfortunate that certainly there's some people that kind of abuse the system, but it's a little bit in the news now because they've made some revisions that's made it a little bit more difficult to get what they call a disability access pass, right? And what that pass would allow you to do is it allow you to basically, if you have someone in your party that has specific types of disabilities, you basically could, almost like a fast pass, get basically to the front of the line. If you have specific issues with you know, from a physical standpoint or even in or a mental standpoint, waiting in line, right? So you're talking about typically people with severe autism or something like that, sensory issues where waiting in a 90-minute line is not going to go well for them. Some people have taken umbrage with that in the past. They're like, well, why do they get to go? And I'm just telling you, if you have someone who isn't able to cope with that, it's not good for any of us for that person to be in line. But there's been some changes to the process where they've put a little additional restrictions. I've been seeing some chatter on social media lately where folks that have traditionally had that in the past are upset that they no longer kind of have that access. I think that this is still part of Disney's efforts. Some would say that now they're not being inclusive. I think it's the opposite, right? I think that the intention here for disability access has always been to make sure that those who have a legitimate disability with being able to wait in a line, not go through that process to not only hurt their own experience, but that of other guests. And if you don't meet certain requirements, and that means that you could wait in a line, even if it's inconvenient, now you're back with the rest of the group where it's inconvenient for the rest of us too. I think there'll be some refinement and some tweaks along the way. Sure. You typically, anytime there's policies like that, you tend to swing all the way one direction, then you swing all the way the other direction, then you try and find the middle. I think Disney's really trying to find the middle right now because they swung completely the opposite direction a few years ago, and now it's time to course correct and refine that and kind of find where the sweet spot in the middle is going to be. But I just applaud the efforts. That's been something that many people have complained about for so long. Well, why do we let someone who has one person with a disability take a group of 20 through the line with them? We've been watching this happen for years. It doesn't make any sense. Well, why don't we limit that to 4 people? That seems a much more reasonable accommodation. You know, the one person isn't able to do it, but the rest of the party is perfectly physically capable of being able to do that. I applaud them for the efforts. It is really hard, though, and this is where I really want to talk about inclusion probably as we wrap this topic up, right? Inclusion is a really, really difficult thing to master because it's impossible to make everyone happy. It's impossible, frankly, to know what everyone's needs are. You only know what you can know. And so sometimes things have to be brought to light or to the forefront, and there have to be some conversations, and some of those are hard conversations where the company has a responsibility to balance the total guest experience for everyone. Inclusion, their goal is to make everyone feel included. But you know that that's always going to ultimately be a personal interpretation, right? You're not going to be able to satisfy that. And I don't think they'll ever talk about it in terms of that publicly because the mission is we want to make everyone feel included. But we all know sitting around these mics today that you're never going to make everyone happy. Yeah. There's always going to be someone who maybe wants a little bit more. my hope is that as you experience your time at the parks and you see opportunities for people that perhaps have specific needs that are outside of social norms or the mainstream needs of everybody else, you give them a little bit of grace and say, hey, this is their way of being able to have their own magical experience, because it's harder perhaps for them to do it than it is for me. And maybe too, as you think about that, it brightens your own day a little bit, right? How cool is it when we watch someone receive some pixie dust of their own? How cool is it for us to be like, wow, that was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Well said, for sure. Okay. Let's move on. I know we're running a little bit long here. So the show key is our next key. And I think of all the keys, this is maybe battling with courtesy as far as Disney's customer service levels, but the show is really where Disney excels, in my opinion. So the show, we all, if you're a big Disney fan, especially if you go to the parks, you realize that you are, once you step through that turnstile, you are considered to be by cast members on stage, which just basically means you're in the show, right? You're in the Disney park experience, and they want you to have a certain experience as part of that show and be immersed in the theming and the storytelling that Disney does so well. So some of the rules and policies that Disney puts in place around this is that, number one, first and foremost, all cast members stay in character at all times. And a great example of this is whenever you do a character meet and greet. I mean, you guys teased me about Tinkerbell earlier, but like, you can go to Tinkerbell and ask her questions about tinkering or whatever it is that Tinkerbells do.
Cinderella,
you can ask, you know, you can ask Cinderella, how are your mice doing? You can ask, you know, Rapunzel, what Pascal is up to, and they immediately stay in character and answer those questions as if they are that character. They and that just trickles down to all the way across, mm-hmm. right? They want you to feel immersed in that story. On that note, they want all the show areas. So if you're on stage, if you're in the parks, they want them to remain show ready. And that can be everything from ride vehicles are working and functioning the way they're supposed to, down to, I mean, it's very famous, the trash can story, right, of Walt bending over to pick up trash, you know, managing where they place the trash cans and trash receptacles throughout the parks so that it stays clean and presentable. You know, along those lines, not seeing other cast members, this is a big story too with Disney, right? Is not seeing cast members out of their natural environment, right? You're never going to see a Tomorrowland employee in Frontierland. It just can't happen. And so, again, they want all those areas to remain show ready. So, from food distribution, I love this, right? Like, you're not seeing a cart of food being wheeled down Main Street to the, you know, to the confectionery, right? You're not seeing the trash guy. I mean, yeah, you're going to see a garbage guy come out, but you're not on the norm seeing the big beeping, flashing lights, garbage truck backing up to the dumpster to empty it in the middle of your park.
Well, and you don't even see people pushing bins where they're going and collecting. You know, traditionally at most theme parks, that's what you see, is you see a custodial staff member collecting the trash bag, sticking it in a bin, going to the next trash can. Like, there's no heaping mounds of trash there, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Even so far,
because you'd never see that in the show.
Yeah, no. Right. Even so far as you'll notice, if you're paying attention along parade routes, as casts are going backstage, there's a big yellow line that's painted on the ground that shows the cast member, you are now in view of guests, right? So you are Tiana in the parade until you cross this yellow line, and then you can take your breath and, you know, take a drink of water, whatever, but you are on stage until you cross that line. One thing that I think is interesting also when you talk about the show is just, we talk about branding, the brand. This is a big catchphrase in the world, right? Like, what's your brand? How are you presenting yourself? I think Disney fiercely protects its image and its brand again, not just in the parks, but across the entire organization. When you go on a Disney cruise, you expect it to be a certain way. It's going to be different than Caribbean, right? Royal Caribbean, or it's going to be very different than Carnival. Even we've talked about this on the show before, right? Like knockoff items. Disney's quick, right? Like they are on you. If you're violating, if you're making your own ears at home and you're bringing them to the park and selling them and they're not Disney certified ears, you're getting nailed. Like, I again, that's all part of the show. And then the final thing I'll say about show is just how they appeal to all of our senses. They just, again, want to totally immerse you in that show experience from your sights, your sounds, your smells, everything that we've talked about. Again, I thought this was an interesting quote. I'll just share it real quick from John Hench, who was like one of the original VPs and Disney Imagineers. He said, "What we create is a Disney realism, sort of a utopian in nature where we carefully program out all the negative, unwanted elements and programs in the positive elements. In fact, we even go beyond realism in some cases to make a better show." So for example, you know, at a castle, you'd have like sewage out. And if they were trying to make it as real as possible, you would not have the castle with the pixie dust and the birds flying around it. And it would be much more gross, right? So he's saying we take out all the negative of this imaginary world that we're creating. But this is the reason why. He says, think about it carefully. As we stand here and look at the castle, every one of our senses are coming into play. This is total involvement. You can never capture this moment and take it home with you in a camera or a tape recorder. You can only take this experience home in your mind. Now multiply this moment by an entire day, by a week, by 1,000 other different experiences, and you start to get some idea of the Disney theme show. I love that, right? Like that is the essence of Disney, is like they want to create this magical memory in your mind, this core memory that we've talked about, so that you can carry on that moment over and over and over again.
I love it. It's without a doubt, it's part of my favorite part of the experience, is knowing that you are part of the show.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to the last one, the efficiency key. This one just really comes down to how Disney, their mindset is as far as design, experience, again, what the guest has experienced. So from the very beginning, as far as efficiency is concerned, Disney, even Walt himself, was extremely interested in, okay, how is the flow of this park going to go? They're going to come up Main Street. You know, he didn't come up with the hub idea, but he certainly incorporated it to help with traffic flow and all of those things. Down to,
no, I think they did come up with the hub, the spoken wheel. I think that was their idea, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, it was in Europe as far as like the Arc de Triomphe in Paris.
Oh,
right?
Okay. No, that's interesting. I'm sorry.
Yes. Yeah. down to like...
You're saying they didn't invent the wheel.
They didn't invent the wheel.
But they used the wheel.
They made it better.
Well, they used the design as like, hey, here's something that makes a lot of sense.
It was innovative with theme park design.
Oh, yeah.
I guess that's what I meant.
Was not part of the theme park mindset, right?
You had Ryan there. He's like, whoa.
Sorry.
Yeah, so, you know, juxtapose this with like your Vegas experience, right? The whole idea of
good
Vegas
luck.
Is...
Get lost.
Yeah, they want to keep you in the casinos as long as they possibly can, yeah. Right? The exits are not clearly marked. Like, it's all about, like, how can we keep these people here as long as we want? As opposed to the Disney park designs are all about how can we make this as efficient and guest-friendly as possible, but efficient for us as well, right? Like, we have to figure out how we're going to maneuver people as the day goes on. Even down to like, I was thinking about different ride experiences, right? Like the Millennium Falcon. Have you guys ever seen the behind the scenes of how that ride works?
Yeah.
It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
It's like this gun revolver that's just loading different, you know, attraction experiences over and over and over again. So that again, they can hold multiple guests, which means shorter wait times. All of these things are all designed to have the guest efficiency in mind. Some other things I brought up was like technology and mobile access. You know, again, everything that is going into the thought process of how can we make the guest experience better, even down to, I know we've been, I'm sure you guys have as well, is the data collection that goes on as Disney is trying to gather information of how they can make this a better experience.
And I want to go just step back for just a second too, when we're talking about movement of the crowds, but think about it after a show, like after the fireworks show, right? You have an army of cast members out there that are directing you which way you can go. You may want to go upstream and they're saying, nope, we're not going upstream. The group is going this way. You'll need to find, because if we allow everyone to just go whatever direction they want, no one will, it's gridlock, right? They're thinking that out long in advance. I mean, I don't know how much stock Disney owns in the 3M Corporation, but the amount of masking tape they use every single day in order to kind of mark off where the crowd should be for their attractions and shows. It's for the parades. It's for the nighttime spectaculars. It's everything. They put so much tape on the ground to kind of help delineate that. So then they can bring in cast members with, you know, their marker lights to send you in a particular direction. And you may not necessarily like that, but you need to understand that if you go with their instructions, you'll have a better experience because they've already figured this out.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. Even to your point, Randy, I think Disney has this open policy of their cast members being the eyes and ears of the corporation, right? Like they understand that those little foot soldiers have a big role to play in, hey, we overheard a guest saying this about what a horrible experience they have. How can we correct that? How can we fix it? How can we make it better?
Well, and how many surveys have you guys received over the years?
Oh my gosh, so Disney? Many surveys.
Tons.
So they're always trying to ask questions and figure out what's going on.
So anyways, that was it. That's all I had as far as the five keys of Disney. I just, again, to me, this is a fascinating topic of how Disney does such a great job of creating that secret sauce that makes the overall guest experience so amazing.
Well, and like I said, I think it'll be interesting when we talk to our friend Sarah and ask her about this topic and how she got to live this firsthand during her time there. So, interesting topic here.
Right on.
Yeah.
Do we want to do a magical scenario? We haven't done one in a while.
It's been a little while. I think there's a topic that we can pontificate upon for just a couple of minutes more.
All right. So here's I saw this on a Instagram reel. This is where I'm getting most of my material. So you listeners need to start chiming in and giving us some good magical scenarios you want us to discuss on the show. But here's what it is. The Galactic Cruiser...
Star Cruiser
Hotel, thank you, is now vacant.
Derelict.
You have some nice 10-cent words today, Randy. I'm impressed. So here's my magical scenario. What are you doing with this property? So to give you a little bit of... for those who maybe haven't experienced it or it's been closed down now for a few months, but it's a fully... Uber themed out Star Wars hotel, has about 100 rooms in it. What are you doing with that? Where do you go with that? Do you just plow it to the ground? What are y'all's thoughts?
And here's some context behind it. From a visual standpoint on the outside, it's hideous. Like it literally looks like, you know, a bunker, right? Yeah. It's a building with no windows, right? There are no windows there. So you have some challenges when you're thinking about what am I going to do with that? But also keep in mind, I can't remember exactly, Ryan, you might know, they spent, you know, $250 million or more building it.
Yeah, like, I mean, this was not a
cheap addition to the experience, but the purpose was they wanted to create basically an on land cruise ship experience mimicking you taking an outer space cruise, but fully immersed in the world of Star Wars.
Yeah. And I think you got to one day go over to Hollywood Studios, visit, you know, Galaxy's Edge and all of that and be immersed in that part of the experience. But other than that, you're pretty much locked into this.
You're
this
locked experience. Into this thing. It was very expensive. It was upwards of about $10,000 for a family of 4 to 6 or something like that to do this 3-day experience, really. 2-day, 2-night experience. And so at the end of the day, they ran into some challenges, which was they couldn't, like cruise ships, they had a hard time filling them, right? Like, don't forget about that. Cruise ships, and you can get some pretty good values on some of those ones if you get it at the right time. They have a hard time filling up. And so Disney found that they had a hard time with this one as well. But now you've got this amazing piece of property, this amazing piece of IP that's got some stuff. Like, what do you do with it? I don't think the answer is that you just turn it into a hotel.
Yeah, no, I agree. I guess if it was me, I'll go first. If it was me, what I would do is make it some sort of daytime part of the park experience, but you still got to make money on it, right? So I'm even okay if you charge an additional charge to go over and have this experience, but you get to have some sort of like interactive, immersive Star Wars theming experience and go over there and, maybe spend a night or two there as part of this experience. But for the most part, you're going over there. What do they call it? LARPing?
Yeah. It's almost like you're LARPing, right? Live action role playing.
Yeah. And then, I brought this up a little bit earlier is like, back in the day at Disney Springs, you had The Void, which was this VR experience, which, today's VRs are just as good or better than, what you were experiencing at Disney Springs. But I think that would be cool, too, is just part of the overall experience. You do a little LARPing, you do a little VR, and just have this excursion experience in this area.
I don't know. I think you're limiting. Again, I think this it kind of perpetuates the same issue that they had from the beginning, is like you are catering to a very small group of people, right? For me personally, if they were to turn this into a LARPing building, I don't know. I have nothing against that. I think role playing, go for it, but I think you're not going to have as many people go over there that would make it financially work. I mean, here's the thing. They've already charged it off. It's already been written off. Like it's about $350 million, probably conservative estimates, right? It's like spending any more money on this thing is less money than they would spend on other attractions that need work. Rumor is Big Thunder is going down for about a year to get some major improvements done on it. Like, if you're going to try to resurrect this Bob Chapek brainchild and it not work again, I don't know. I'm like, you just take the loss. I think that's kind of my thing. Just take the loss.
You're ready to scrape it.
I'm claustrophobic. Like, I don't want to go to a place with no windows. That doesn't seem.
Outer space is not for you.
30 feet in the air is not for me. So I would not want to. To me, it doesn't sound interesting.
What if they created a package where you could also include like a dining experience at.
I think that there is so much potential here. I'm not opposed to the cruise experience. I think that you could continue to offer that, but I think you have to open this up to allow for some daytime guests to have a partial experience in there as well. And I think that goes beyond, role play or anything like that. We're talking about an immersive experience, right? So whether you decide to actually role play or not, we're going to put you in the culture. When you get to Galaxy's Edge, you're in there already. Everything around there, you're completely surrounded. Cast members talk to you as if you're on a completely different planet. You have a hard time reading any of the signs because it looks like they're written in an alphabet that you don't recognize. You can do so much with this piece of property where there's kind of a half day excursion sort of thing. We have We have experiences where people are allowed to build droids, where they're allowed to build lightsabers. This is kind of the next evolution of that. And folks are willing to spend a couple hundred bucks to do that sort of a thing. Why couldn't we allow them to spend a couple hundred bucks for a half day experience, you know, over there? And now they get to go and do some lightsaber training. And I just think that I think you can utilize and of course, you have some dining options because remember, this was a hotel, a full immersive hotel. So they were providing dining there. So now you have some additional dining options where you could turn tables and do things more on the regular. And then you could still have a probably select group of guests who are willing to pay the high dollars, just like you do on a VIP tour, okay, who are willing to pay the high dollars to be there for a more comprehensive immersive experience that goes overnight. I wouldn't just scrape it off, though. I think that this is an opportunity. We talked about the pendulum swinging both ways. Now it's time to swing it the other way and see, okay, are there things that we can do more one-offs before they finally figure out what that sweet spot's going to be in the middle? $10,000 per family is not a sustainable thing, right? Especially when your bread and butter actually is getting them in the parks. So let's not forget, for the Disney Corporation, the only thing that's profitable for them right now is the parks.
Yeah.
They're losing money on literally every other aspect of their business. Parks is what's driving profit margins. So you need to get them into the parks. And I think they closed Galactic Star Cruiser down because it was not moving that needle. So the question is, what can we do that? Well, there's a connection. Let's figure out how we get people in there. Let's figure out how they can have a better, more immersive experience, build on the things we're already doing. Galaxy's Edge, in my opinion, already, and this could be a controversy, it's already a little tired, okay? It's open. It's been open for a few years. Nothing's added, changed, or whatever. You can only do it so many times before you're like, okay, I guess I've done this. I feel the same way about Toy Story Land. That's why they just added Woody's Rodeo Roundup Barbecue,
yeah,
right? Because you need to add something into these places from time to time to keep it fresh. It's why, you know, Rock and Roller Coaster has undergone a huge multi-month long downtime to help try and revitalize and bring some stuff. I hope it's more than just like smoothing out a couple parts of the track. Like they need to bring something in there to keep that energy going. And this is an opportunity to do that in Hollywood Studios and to expand their footprint a little bit.
Be cool if they incorporated more of the original trilogy storyline versus the...
Yeah, and look, you know...
I mean, at
I agree.
At the hotel.
That probably would be a game changer for me. I need some more of the episodes 4, 5, and 6 in the parks.
Yeah.
I need more episodes 1, 2, and 3, like anything more than 7, 8, 9, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's all revolved around that so much. And I don't know. I don't have any numbers to back this up, but I don't think that is everyone's favorite part of Star Wars lore.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, interesting show. Hope it wasn't too boring. A little more business corporate oriented with the keys and the philosophy of Disney, but I think it helped us peel back the curtain and kind of show what Disney's secret sauce is and why it's such a great place to go and visit. Give us a like and a follow on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and thanks for listening in.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.